But now it's time for the Early Music Show, which returns after a summer break. Here's Lucy Skeeping.
We tend to think that our enthusiasm for early music began in the 20th century when scholars began to rediscover some of the long-forgotten composers and make transcriptions of their works for performance. But all that was actually nothing new. In fact, the cultivation of what was called ancient music was alive and well back in 18th century England, a significant element of musical life, with both professionals and amateurs involved in collecting, copying and performing it. And it seems it wasn't just Purcell, Handel and the ever-fashionable Italian composers who took their fancy. In today's programme, we're looking at the Portuguese composer Duarte Lobo, whose masses and motets enjoyed enormous popularity in England from the 1730s, with regular performances for the next 100 years. And although we don't know for sure the year of Lobo's birth, it's thought to have been 1565, making this year the 450th anniversary of his birth, probably, and therefore an excellent excuse to have a closer look at the man and his music. Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. Therefore, I am not worthy to be called your son. One of the, I think, deeply moving motets from Liber Miserum of 1621 by Duarte Lobo. The performers there were the 16, directed by Harry Christophers. Lobo was the most widely known Portuguese composer of his time. He was in charge of the music at Lisbon Cathedral, and his music certainly was much performed in his own country, and also in the Spanish Netherlands and in Mexico and Guatemala. And yet partly, perhaps, because so many of his works were destroyed in the mid-18th century in the Lisbon earthquake, we don't hear much about him these days. To discuss the music of Duarte Lobo and his significance in the wider musical world, I'm joined by Owen Rees, Professor of Music at Oxford University and Fellow and Director of Music at the Queen's College. Welcome to the show, Owen. Thanks for joining us. Now, you've been exploring and performing Lobo's music for some time, I know, and I was intrigued to hear just how you've uncovered an English connection.
Well, it was by chance, really. Those who'd worked on the music of Duarte Lobo and on Portuguese early music were not aware that there were any surviving copies of his printed music in English libraries. And I came across, by chance, one day when consulting the paper card catalogue in the Bodleian Library in Oxford, an annotation which showed that there in the Bodleian Library was a copy of the first printed book of Masses, the Liber Missarum of Duarte Lobo. And it's a beautifully preserved copy. It's one of the best preserved copies of the about 15 copies we have of that print surviving in various parts of the world.
OK, so let's get this clear. What was a Renaissance book of Portuguese church music doing in the Bodleian Library?
Well, luckily, we have an annotation by hand added to the title page, which tells us who gave the volume to the Bodleian and when they did so. So it was presented to the library by a book dealer called George Thomason in 1659. And he and his partner were importers of music books from the continent. They probably bought it not because they were interested in the contents musically, but because it was a beautiful book, folio size, a very large book, beautifully printed by probably the most prestigious music printing house of the early 17th century, which was the firm created by Plantin in the 16th century. So it's a beautiful book, and Thomason presents it to the Bodleian, and it stayed there and ended up being used by people interested in early music in England.
And as I said in my introduction, I was kind of quite surprised to find out that people were interested in looking back to the past in, say, the 18th century, because one has a sense that perhaps they tended to like their own contemporary music at that time. So there was still a feeling of wanting to hear older music, was there?
Absolutely. I think what had actually been in some ways a continuous interest in certain aspects of, for example, earlier English music in this country, gathered pace in 18th century London in particular, and you get the foundation of these societies who are dedicated to the study of and performing of music of the 16th century and the 17th century. Those societies benefited from the copying activities of some of these enthusiasts, and it was one such man, Henry Needler, who was a civil servant by profession, but who spent a lot of his spare time copying music from previous ages. It's thanks to Needler that the copies of works by Duarte de Lobo made their way from this original copy in Oxford to performing copies used by these London societies.
Well, before we go on to talk a little more about that and your kind of discovery, as it were, shall we hear some music from the book? The collection contains various pieces, doesn't it? What are we going to hear? Tell us about it.
Well, it's basically a collection of masses, but right at the end of the book are two motets, one of which we heard, Pater Peccavi, and following that motet is the one that became really something of a hit in these societies in 18th century London, which is called Audivi Vossem de Celo. It's a six-voice motet, and it's a brief piece, but one which obviously captured the imagination of these musicians in 18th century London.
Thank you.
Another motet from Liber Missarum of 1621, a collection of music by Duarte Lubo. I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, "Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord." Was that, Owen, was that therefore a funeral piece?
Yes, it actually follows the eight-voice Requiem by Duarte Lobo, the Requiem Mass by Duarte Lobo, one of two Requiems that survived by the composer towards the end of the 1621 Book of Masses. And Lobo probably put the pair of motets, Pater Peccavi and Audivi Vossem, together. The first talks about our need for repentance. It's the story of the prodigal son. And then Audivi Vossem talks about the reward in heaven for those who are blessed. Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. So that pairing is probably deliberate.
I was quite interested about these performances by these sort of amateur choirs in England in the 18th century of this music. I mean, would a Portuguese composer of this period be considered a bit exotic?
Well, many of those performing this music might not have realised that he was Portuguese. Henry Needler, who was one of those who copied from the Oxford copy of the Liber Missarum, certainly did, because he copied all the prefatory matter, which makes it clear that Lobo is a Portuguese composer. But the form of Lobo's name that appears in the title page is Eduardi Lupi. It's the genitive, it's the works of Eduardus Lupus, the Latin form of his name. So a lot of these singers and musical antiquarians in 18th century London thought that his surname clearly was Lupi. And indeed, Novello, who published an edition of Audivi Vossem in the 19th century, includes this piece in a volume which he says is by Italian masters. And that's ironic because Novello was organist of the Portuguese Embassy Church in London and would have done some Portuguese music, though perhaps of later periods, but apparently wasn't aware that this piece was by a Portuguese composer.
Let's talk a little bit about Lobo's early life in Portugal. What kind of world did he come from? And indeed, I really want to know how he was considered in context in his own time.
So he was educated at the choir school of Évora Cathedral, which was a centre famous for producing some of the most successful Portuguese musicians of the period. But Lobo, like many eminent Portuguese composers of that period, made his career in Lisbon, and he worked as chapel master at Lisbon Cathedral, and again as chapel master at the Royal Hospital of All Saints in Lisbon. And it's apparent from what is said about him by some of his pupils that he was extremely highly regarded as a teacher, not only of composition, but also of music theory.
What about Lobo's style? Where does he sit, say, in relation to some of the Italian composers of the period?
Well, we know that he was strongly influenced by the music of Palestrina. One very good way of estimating which composers were influences upon another composer in this period is to look at their masses, and particularly those masses which belong to the genre which we most often call parody masses.
And that, what is that, when they sort of copy other composers' themes, or what does that mean?
Absolutely. So a parody mass is a mass where you take a polyphonic piece. It might be a madrigal or a motet or a chanson by another composer, and you use elements of all the voice parts from that model piece to build your setting of the mass.
Sort of early sampling, really.
Absolutely, yes. And in the case of Lobo, if we look at all his masses that belong to that genre, we find that two composers win hands down in terms of being his favourite models, his source of material. One is Palestrina, so that's the Italian influence. And the other is a composer who was among the most successful Spanish composers of the so-called Golden Age, Francisco Guerrero. So Palestrina and Guerrero win in terms of the number of models used, pieces used by Lobo for his own masses.
Now, we're going to hear one of the masses now from the collection, but this one, in fact, isn't a parody mass, is it? It's based on sort of traditional plain chant.
That's right. It belongs to two genres of mass, which most often in this period will be based on the chant. One of those two genres is Requiem masses, and the other is masses for the Blessed Virgin Mary. And a piece like this would have been most probably sung more commonly in Lobo's context than most of the other masses in his first book of masses, because it could be used for mass on any of the major Marian feasts that fell throughout the liturgical year, or, for example, on Saturdays, which was a day particularly dedicated to honouring Mary.
And this is you directing the choir, isn't it, Owen? This is the choir of Queen's College, Oxford.
That's right, yes.
Credo, and before that the Gloria and the Kyrie from the Mass of the Blessed Virgin Mary by Duarte Lobo of 1621, a Portuguese composer who I'm talking about today with my guest Owen Rees. Owen, that was you directing the choir of Queen's College, Oxford. Beautiful, beautiful sound. I guess there must have been quite a lot of work to be done before you could make that recording. For a start, you transcribed the music from the original manuscript, am I right?
That's right, yes. This piece is preserved in Lobo's 1621 Liber Missarum, that printed book. So the first task was for me to transcribe it from that source. And my transcription has been used with various choirs since then, so I've performed the work in Portugal and also in Oxford with the Choir of the Queen's College. And we included it on a recording. It was actually a pair of recordings that the choir made featuring quite a lot of Portuguese polyphony of this period, usually pieces that had not previously been transcribed and performed. And obviously that's quite an exciting experience for the singers to know that they are recording this music for the first time in modern times, although, as we know, some of Lobo's music, in fact, had quite a long performance history through the 18th and 19th centuries.
Well, we're going to hear the rest of the Mass in a moment, but first of all, we're going to hear some organ music, not by Lobo this time. Tell us why we're including this.
So on the recording we made, we wanted to give some sense of the alternation of plain chant, polyphony and instrumental music that would have been a hallmark of the performance of the liturgy in Lobo's time. And so on this disc we include some organ versets by Manuel Rodrigues Coelho, who was the organist of the Royal Chapel in Lisbon, a contemporary of Lobo's working down the road in Lisbon at the same time.
Thank you.
the last three sections of the Mass to the Blessed Virgin Mary by Duarte Lobo, the 16th century Portuguese composer, and it was performed there by the choir of the Queen's College, Oxford, directed by Owen Rees, who's my guest in the studio today. And before that, we had Charlotte Phillips with a piece for organ by Manuel Rodriguez Coelho, one of Lobo's contemporaries. You're listening to The Early Music Show on BBC Radio 3 with me, Lucy Skeeping. Now, Owen, we were talking about Lobo's sort of life in Portugal, in Lisbon. It seems that he sort of managed to have a much bigger international career than he might have done because he found a publisher who would sort of spread the word.
That's correct. In comparison to his Portuguese contemporaries like Manuel Cardoso and Filipe de Magalhães, whose music was published by the local royal printer of music, Kreisbeck, Lobo was very fortunate to have his pieces issued in these very fine volumes by the Plantin House in Antwerp. And the fact that they were published by that house ensured a much broader international distribution. It also made them more appealing as books than were the printed music books of some of his contemporaries, which are rather less typographically fine than these four printed editions of Lobo's music. So in the case of the Liber Missarum, we know of about 15 copies out of the original print run of 200 copies that survive. There may well be more. And that distribution is international. So we know that copies reached Mexico, they reached Brazil, a copy reached Macau in the Far East, and we have a good number of copies surviving in Portugal. Several copies clearly were sent by the composer to the great Spanish cathedrals as well.
We're going to hear part of one of Lobo's requiems now, but this is from a later period and it's got a rather different feel. Is there a sense of moving into a more modern style?
Certainly this requiem, the sixth voice requiem, was published later than the eighth voice work. So it's published in the second of his printed books of masses, which appeared in 1639. And it's often been noted that the sixth voice requiem has a particularly rich harmonic language, and in fact we'll hear that in the introit. In particular, Lobo is very fond of causing a clash between the voice that's carrying the plain chant and one of the other voices that will sing a note just one note lower than the chant pitch at that point. It's the kind of rich effect which one also finds, for example, in the sixth voice requiem by Victoria, that most famous requiem of this period.
And we're going to hear the Talis Scholars, directed by Peter Phillips, with the introit.
Thank you.
the Talis Scholars, directed by Peter Phillips, with the introit from Lobo's Requiem for Six Voices. Owen Rees is with me. What is Lobo's legacy, would you say?
Well, I think on the one hand, we know that his music continued to be copied from these beautiful printed books over the centuries in the great cathedrals of the Iberian world. The second part of his legacy is perhaps through his pupils. And we have a number of important Portuguese theorists and composers of the next generation who attribute what they learnt to Lobo and speak in the highest terms of his skills as a teacher. And these include both composers and theorists. For example, a musician called Manuel Machado, who ended up working at the Spanish royal court. The third legacy, and the one that, when I discovered it, I was most surprised by, is this English, and then in the 19th century also Parisian, story of copying and performing Lobo, such that if you had gone to a meeting of the Madrigal Society, one of these antiquarian societies in the 1760s in London, in the city, you would have quite likely been involved in a performance of Audivi Vossem, that motet by Duarte Lobo. It was clearly one of their favourite pieces at that stage. And some of the pieces that were copied by these English antiquarians are more surprising, given that it's harder to imagine them being used. For example, the eight-voice Requiem by Lobo, which comes towards the end of the 1621 Liber Missarum, is one of those pieces for which we have a larger number of copies in the hands of these English copyists.
And we're going to hear part of that now, one of the most popular pieces, as you say, in England in the 18th century. This is the 16th. Directed by Harry Christophers. My great thanks to Owen Rees for coming in. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
the Lux Aeterna, and before that the Agnus Dei, Sanctus and Benedictus from the eight-part Requiem by Duarte Lobu. Harry Christophers conducted the 16. And it brings to an end today's edition of the Early Music Show. Lucy Skeeping's guest was Owen Rees, Professor of Music at Oxford University. Next week on the Early Music Show, Claire Salomon considers why instruments which were once part of musical life, such as the viol, the bray harp, the hurdy-gurdy and the viola organista, are now rarely heard.